You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. My name is Jen Zaman, and I am the engineer, and Judy is out on assignment tonight. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Greater Kansas City Building Trades Council and Pipe Fitters Local 533. The KC Building Trades Council are the men and women who build KC. The pipe fitter powers the engines of industry that keep businesses thriving in America. They install, maintain, and service any system that involves air conditioning, heating, chemicals, or refrigeration in residential, commercial, or industrial buildings, as well as high-tech clean rooms. And the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. Tonight on the Heartland Labor Forum, roofing is a tough, dangerous job that takes skill. If you don't have a union, it's brutal. This week we'll be talking to Kevin King, business manager of Roofers Union Local 20. They're celebrating 100 years as a union, and we'll find out how our youth can find good jobs in the trades. In the news, longtime KC labor leader Sam Long dies, and big legal victory for voting rights in Missouri. Our feature at the end of the show is Remember Our Struggle with Ariana Eckel, and she will be talking about the general strikes happening all over the world. And now for the news.
Today, Missouri voting rights advocates celebrated a significant victory, making it easier for state's residents to exercise their fundamental right to vote. The victory results from the settlement of a lawsuit filed by the League of Women Voters of Missouri and the St. Louis and Greater Kansas City chapters of the A. Philip Randolph Institute. The lawsuit alleges Missouri violated the National Voter Registration Act, a federal law designed to aid voter registration. As part of the settlement agreement, the state of Missouri must provide voter registration services to residents who update their driver's license or state ID address online with the state's Department of Revenue. The settlement also streamlines existing voter registration services offered in person at the state motor vehicle offices. Others involved in the case were the Demos, the ACLU of Missouri, and the Advancement Project, and Covington and Burling lawyers filed suit in April of 2018 against Missouri Secretary of State John R. Ashcroft. The suit alleges that the Department of Revenue failed to provide Missouri residents with the voter registration services required by the National Voter Registration Act. In September 2018, a federal court ordered Missouri to make interim changes in order to improve voter registration processes ahead of the midterm elections. Today's agreement concludes the legal dispute between the parties. Under the agreement, the state of Missouri will be required to implement various measures improving and streamlining voter registration services. For the first time, Missouri will provide registration services to residents who visit the Department of Revenue's online change of address site. In the months ahead, customers who use the agency online change of address system to update the addresses associated with their license or identification card will be automatically redirected to the Secretary of State's online voter registration system. Information entered on the Department of Revenue's webpage will be pre-populated on the Secretary of State site, allowing residents to more easily register or update their voter registration to reflect their new address. The agreement further provides for improvements to streamline license and identification card transactions conducted in motor vehicle offices.
On Wednesday, a group led by Never Again Action, a Jewish group that wants to shut down ICE, or Immigration and Customs Enforcement, demonstrated in front of UMB Bank downtown. Never Again Action sees ICE as the new Gestapo. They say on their web pages, children dying in camps, families living in fear. We've seen this before. We won't let it happen again. Never Again is now. Thoughts and prayers won't save lives. It is our actions that matter. We will be the allies that our Jewish ancestors needed in Germany before it was too late. So why UMB Bank? The group says that UMB has sued the city of Central Falls, Rhode Island for $130 million for daring to cancel the contract the privatized Wyatt detention facility has allowing immigrant prisoners to be housed. Many jails get payments from the federal government for holding immigrant prisoners. UMB Bank represents bondholders who invested in the jail's construction. At Tuesday's demonstration, seven people were arrested demonstrating at UMB, which closed in anticipation of the action. In Rhode Island, 400 protesters blocked the only driveways allowing entry or exit to the Wyatt Detention Center for about 2 hours. UMB Bank says the city of Central Falls is at fault. They could pay off the bonds and remove UMB's clients from the issue. A UMB spokesperson told the Kansas City Star, "This lawsuit is not politically based, but rather was filed to ensure the bondholders' financial investment is recouped."
Sam Long died November 27th. He was 91 years old. In the 1980s in Kansas City, he was probably our most well-known labor leader. He became business manager of Operating Engineers Local 101 in 1979. He helped found the United Labor Credit Union, was chair of the Jackson County Democratic Committee, served on the Planned Industrial Expansion Authority and the Housing Authority Advisory Board, and several others. He even was one of the founders of UMKC and Longview's Institute for Labor Studies. Sam became widely known in the early 1980s when he commissioned a billboard with a picture of Ronald Reagan with a very long nose. The subtitle was "The Pinocchio President." Perhaps because of that, the federal government investigated Sam for misuse of an OSHA grant, which he allegedly used only to build a model of a project which was never built. Sam was one of the last labor leaders in Kansas City with a real colorful, tough guy image. While there were allegations of crime against him, he generally used his power to benefit his members and the labor movement. Sam retired from Operating Engineers in 1992. A Celebration of Life memorial service will be held Saturday, December 14th at 11 a.m. at Muehlbach Funeral Care, 6800 Truce, Kansas City, with burial afterward at Forest Hill and Calvary Cemetery at 6901 Truce.
This just in from Vice News. A new report on employer opposition to union campaigns released today by the Economic Policy Institute, or the EPI, found that employers spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year against union organizing efforts and were charged with breaking federal labor laws in 41.5% of union campaigns in 2016 and 2017. While the authors of the report, who gained access to unfair labor complaints through FOIA requests, could not comment on specific cases, they say that the newly organized tech industry is no exception. Tech companies have traditionally set themselves aside as cutting-edge employers, but what you're seeing increasingly is that they behave the same way as Walmarts and Targets. Celine McNicholas, one of the report's authors, who's reviewed thousands of complaints filed with the NLRB, told Motherboard. When faced with demands of improved working conditions and respecting workers' voices, they turn to union avoidance consultants. They'd rather spend the money there than on addressing the demands of their workforce. Under the most conservative estimates, the authors find that employers are charged with unlawfully firing workers in nearly 20% of union campaigns. Nearly one-third of the union campaigns filed with the NLRB in 2016 and 2017 involved reports of illegal coercion, threats, or retaliation against workers for supporting a union, the study found. The report also provides important new information on the union avoidance industry, which includes anti-union law and consulting firms. According to new data, U.S. employers spend nearly $340 million each year on advisors that conduct quote-unquote union vulnerability tests and provide companies with important recommendations for crushing union drives at their companies. IRI Consultants, the firm that Google hired this year, advertises on its website that it implements successful educational campaigns designed to inform employees about the true impact and cost of unionization in the workplace. The news tonight was read by Michael Hoag, Joyce McCauley, Tom Gepkin, and I'm Jen Zaman.
Are you tired of always being told no? Do you feel you got no place to go? Then stand up and sing this song!
I'm Tom Gepkin, and I am with Joyce McCauley. Roofs have been necessary since our ancestors first stepped out of their caves and began building shelters using indigenous materials. While our modern-day coverings have come a long way from thatched roofs and grass and twigs, the principle remains the same. Skilled craftsmen use their talents to provide the lasting shelter and protection. In 1919, the International Slate and Tile Roofers Union of America and the International Brotherhood of Composition Roofers, Damp, and Waterproof Workers met in Pittsburgh and merged to form the United Slate, Tile, and Composition Roofers, Damp, and Waterproof Workers Association. This merged union grew from 1,600 members to more than 7,000 by World War II. Construction blossomed after the war. By 1978, the union had 28,000 members. It was during that year that the union adopted its new name, the United Union of Roofers, Waterproofers, and Allied Workers. Their work continues today with an emphasis on health and safety, especially the development of standards to protect workers. Through the MOVE program, they are focusing their efforts on organizing new members to increase members' bargaining power and strengthen the industry. Roofers Local 20 was chartered in 1919, and has been providing skilled labor to contractors for 100 years. Preventing moisture intrusion is the main focus of the industry. Signatory contractors have an average business history of over 50 years. A few of them have been in the industry for over 100 years. On the show tonight, we have Kevin King. He is the business manager for the Roofers Local 20. Local 20 covers the Kansas City Metro, Topeka, St. Joe, Springfield, Jeff City, Fort Smith. He also is a member of the Kansas City AFL-CIO Labor Council. Kevin spends a lot of time on the road away from his family, making sure his members have what they need to be successful, ensuring prevailing wages are correctly paid, recruiting new contractors, visiting legislators and state capitals, and working to protect the pension plan, providing retirees with an enjoyable retirement. He was also a key player in ensuring construction of the new terminal at KCI would be a union project. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
100 years as a union, that's something to be really proud of. With that length of time and the business managers that came before you, you probably have some big shoes to fill. How'd you get your start with Local 20?
I was actually in printing first, and the printing company I worked for was shutting down. My wife's grandfather, Joe Whitaker, which was also a business manager for Roofers Local 20 and also for a short time the international president, said, you know, hey, look, until you find something in printing, you want to, you know, I can get you into roofing if that's what you want to do. And I said, yeah, I need to bring money in. And that started it. And I never left.
Never looked back.
Still in here.
So your training was all on the job, and being trained by the company you were working for at that time?
Yeah, so a lot of it was on the job, but we also went through our apprenticeship program too. Back then it was a four-year program, so that's where I got a lot of it. And you know, the more technical things are what we work on in the apprenticeship program. That's where I learned and then took the journeyman's test and was able to pass it.
In taking the journeyman's test, you're ready to handle any roofing need that's out there.
Yeah, one of the things that's great about apprenticeship programs, especially roofers, is we go through every aspect of roofing that there is and make sure, because when you become a journeyman roofer and a waterproofer, you have to be well-rounded in every aspect of roofing.
How did the roofing union start 100 years ago?
Well, you know what? It's funny because we just celebrated our 100th year anniversary. But going through research and finding out some things and everything, actually there was a roofers union in 1902, and it kind of developed from there. Ben Vetter was actually our first business manager. He actually was the one that was running that union at the time, and then when they came in 1919 and merged everything together, he actually was our first business manager. So that's how it kind of got started, and it just kind of evolved from there and just kept growing and growing. And now we're here today, you know, 100 years later, and we're still going strong.
It's been providing good jobs for a lot of people for 100 years.
Absolutely.
When it was first a union 100 years ago, what were the people that roofed unions? Where'd they come from? Were they immigrants? Tell us about that.
I think they probably came from all over. I mean, I don't know the history of every, you know, the whole thing behind that and what kind of workers we had, but I would assume at that point in time, with the way that the United States was growing and people were coming over here to live and
make their way
and try to provide for their families that they had, that they came over here and they were looking for any kind of job that they could get. Back during that time, a journeyman roofer at that time made 75 cents an hour. That's what they started at, 75 cents an hour.
That was probably good money back then, mm-hmm. Wasn't it?
I would assume it probably was.
With every industry, technology has changed. How has technology changed in the roofing industry?
Wow, it's back in the old days and even up until probably the last 25 years, we did a lot of built-up roofs, which was tar and gravel roofs. Now the technology has changed. Now they're coming out with what they call single-ply. That's prevalent now. The asphalt roofs have kind of gone to the wayside a little bit, which is a shame because they're probably some of the best roofs that you could put on. But single ply, the labor, it's not as intensive, it's not as expensive, and so it saves the people that are putting it on. It saves them a little bit of money. It may not be as strong as what the roofs were back then, but they are good quality roofs.
I do have a question to ask you. With the solar panels that are on a whole bunch of roofs all over, how do you replace the roof with the solar panels on them?
Well, that's a good question. The first thing you got to do, obviously, is if you're going to replace the roof with solar panels on it, you got to take the solar panels off. What people don't understand is you don't have qualified people or skilled people that typically put some of them solar panels in. And so what we run into is warranty issues, to be honest with you, because you have to have a roofer out there. If you're going to install solar panels on any roof, you're going to have penetrations, whether it's on a house or a commercial building. You need to have a good qualified roofer out there so he knows how to take care of that, where you don't get water intrusion in your building or in your house.
And that's one of the things you guys now learn to remove those and then reinstall them?
We typically don't remove them. We usually have somebody else come in because you gotta turn the power off, and you've got to unhook them and unhook the wires to get them off. We'll let electricians handle that.
Okay.
Then we'll go in and take care of the rest of it, and then lay the roof back up, and then let them come back in and reattach them and get them back together.
The Trump administration, they have proposed changes to apprenticeship certifications. How would that affect the roofing industry?
That's a great question. And, you know, what has happened over recent years is I think they, you know, for over 80 years we've had apprenticeship programs here, and they're registered through the Department of Labor. Some of his proposals have been where they're industry-recognized apprenticeship programs, which does away with being having to be registered through the Department of Labor. It also changes the wages and the safety because they're not really getting trained like we would. It's not necessarily an apprenticeship program, so to speak. It lowers the wages where they can set the wages just about where they want. The training hours are a lot less. And so the guys and the men and women that are working, not just in our industry, but every industry, are not going to get the training, the full training that they would normally get. And that's a concern for everybody. I mean, anytime you're working in a construction field, everybody wants to feel safe. I mean, that's a big part of every construction industry field is not making sure that you make it home at night to your family.
You want to go home the way you came in?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And the four-year apprentice program is, you learn a lot in that, yeah. And you're not going to learn it in a three-month certificate.
Right. And that's one of the things, you know, you talk about technology and everything. With the way that this has changed, we actually have gone to a five-year program now just because we've got to get more training with the technology that comes along. We've got new products, new materials mm-hmm. coming in. And so we got to make sure that everybody understands how the industry is evolving.
A lot of construction fields have a lot of immigrants in that and has a history of that. How has immigration played into the roofing industry?
I would probably say right now we have between probably 35 and 38% minorities in there. So it has played a big role in there. We've got to help them. There are, you know, they're providing for their family just like we are. And so we try to really encourage them and try to talk to them and show. I mean, you know, unions provide insurance and they provide pensions. And it's no cost. There's really no cost to the member. The member doesn't have to pay for the insurance. It's paid by the contractor, and so are the pensions. So we're trying to show them just a better lifestyle for them and for their family so they can provide better for their family. You know, that's including the health and welfare and the pensions, but also the wages, because the wages, you see a lot of times where the wages are a lot lower on the non-union side than they are on the union side. And quite frankly, I don't know sometimes that I think that the contractor doesn't care as much as what our contractors care about their guys. I mean, our contractors really try to take care of their guys and make sure they stay safe, give them all the tools that they need to go home.
There's a loyalty partnership there.
Absolutely.
Now, talking about the contractor partners, that's a pretty good relationship between the union and the roofing and the contractor partners. Would you discuss that a little bit?
Well, I think it's important that, look, you represent as a business manager, you know, you're representing your members. But if you don't have contractors, you don't have members. And if you don't have members, you don't have contractors. So, you know, there's a fine line in there where you really have to work together with everybody to make sure that, number one, that they are provided with the manpower that they need. And yet you've got to make sure that they play by the rules, so to speak. They follow a collective bargaining agreement. We typically don't have any problems with that. If we do, we can usually pick up the phone. I have a pretty decent relationship, and we can try to get it worked out. But it is important. You got to work together. And if you don't work together, you're going to have all kinds of issues.
Okay, you are in the building trades. You're in the AFL-CIO. Would you discuss your role?
I sit on the executive board with the AFL-CIO. I'm the vice president of the Greater Kansas City Building Trades Council. I'm also on the executive board of the Missouri State Building and Trades Council. So I'm involved in a lot of different aspects. I feel like it's important to be involved because if you're going to try to change anything, you have to be involved. You just can't sit by the wayside. You got to voice your opinion. Tom, you probably know me just as well as anybody in this room. I'm not afraid to speak my mind.
That is true.
In certain things. But you have to, you know, I believe in unions. I believe my dad was a union fitter for 45 years. I grew up in a union household. So this is, I'm just trying to make sure that our members are taken care of. And that we provide a good living for them, and make sure that we work hard to voice our opinions. And if something's not right, or if the law looks like it's not going to be good for us, we have to stand up and protect our rights.
One of the things you want is you want a secure future for your members, and the way to get that is to go out and get it. They're not going to give it to you.
Right, and not just for their members, but for their family as well. Family. Because this is, I mean. You know, I'm fortunate. I have five kids. And so one of the things that the union's been able to do for me and my family, including my wife, they were at one time, I think we had four or five of them in going to college at the same time. So it gave us that mm-hmm. opportunity to provide for our kids and give them the opportunities to go to school mm-hmm. and be okay.
And have a nice retirement when it's all over.
Exactly. I hope so. I'm looking forward to that day. I think me and my wife argue about this on when I'm going to retire, because she says I can't retire till she does, and I don't know if I want to wait that long.
Well, we're talking with Kevin King. He is the business manager of Roofers Local 20, and they are based out of Kansas City, but they cover a wide area. Let's go to talk about the airport. What the skilled trade unions, what will they achieve at the airport?
Man hours, number one. Hopefully a good harmony. That's the biggest thing, but there's a lot of man hours out there. You know, we worked really hard to get an agreement on there, and it wasn't easy. There was a lot of different factors that were in place in this and played in determining what we were going to do on that on the airport. I actually sit on the labor management committee with that, so I was involved with the negotiations on the labor agreement there. But it was important that we at least got something into place. It's not perfect by any means. I wish we had more in there. But fortunately, at least we have something in place, because my thought was that if we didn't get anything in place, we were going to lose, and we were going to lose a lot of man hours.
Okay. There are some positive things with the large-scale project for that union and for all of the unions, and it's important. It's going to help build the retirement funds. It's going to train a whole bunch of apprentices. It's going to take care of a whole lot of things.
Well, and I also think, too, there, you know, some of the contractors that may not be union that might be working on that project has an opportunity for those trades to organize and maybe the company all together, but also maybe possibly the members. So far, everybody that's done work on the project has signed a letter of assent under a collective bargaining agreement. So, and that's one of the things that we tried to do, is we tried to do one job agreements to give these guys an opportunity, not lock them into a full agreement. Most agreements that go anywhere from 3 to 5 years, but we wanted to make sure that we could help them.
So. Okay. There are opportunities to be a roofer.
Yes, there are.
What does a person that's interested in that, what do they need to do?
Well, first of all, they can contact the hall and give us a call. They can go to our website, which is www.rooferslocal20.com. They can get some information there. The most important thing is they've got to be interested, right? It's hard work. It's dirty work. It's not, I would say it may be one of the toughest trades out there. But they, you know, we've got a list of contractors on our website. They can come by the hall and get a list of our contractors. But that's the most important thing. They need to get a list of our contractors. We're a referral hall, so we're not a hiring hall. So they have to go out to the contractors and secure their job. So
they come to you. They say, I want to be a roofer. They sign up for the apprentice program.
Well, they have to get hired by our contractor first. So if they come to us and say, we want to be a roofer, we're going to give them a list of our contractors, and we're going to say, here's our list of contractors. Go by their physically go by, because our contractors, and I bet there's several in any trade, well, they'll say, if you just pick up the phone and call and you really want a job, we're going to tell you we're not hiring, right? Because we want to see you in person. We want you to physically come down here and put in an application. And so that's the first thing, first steps, is we'll give them a list, and then they go to the contractors and fill out the application. And then the contractor at that point will sign an intent to hire to put them into the apprenticeship program.
So one of the reasons I joined the interview was to talk a little bit about what's going on in high schools and maybe community colleges with the trades, because I know that there's a need for workers and trained personnel to join, you know, different kinds of trades. I was looking, I didn't find any roofing, but I found automotive, carpentry, electricians, and all of those things that are now happening in the high schools.
Right.
And I know that your group has worked with some of the schools.
Yeah. First of all, one of the things that we have partnered up, and this is through the building trade, that's called Preps KC, and we have a website called beunion.com. This is concentrated with the football teams in the greater Kansas City area. And so it gives us opportunities. We sponsor what we call the BUnion.com Game of the Week. And so each the school, everybody gets to vote on it. They give them about six choices of games for the week. They vote on which game that they want to see or they think may be the best game. And then we give each team of those two teams a $500 check. But what it does is it gives access to those players. Not all those kids are going to Division II or going to go play college football. It gives us access to all the kids throughout every football team. We also sponsor the high school all-star game during June, and we get a chance to go in front of the kids. We actually fix them dinner and feed them the night before the game, and we get an opportunity to spend time with the kids.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the apprenticeship program some more.
Hello, this is Joseph Jackson. Join me on Cowtown Conversations, where we will discuss matters that impact your life as a resident of the Kansas City metropolitan area, every Thursday morning at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
Ebony's Bones is a kitchen table conversation that explores the souls of Black folk as we decolonize and question everything that we've been told to believe. Tune in this Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. and have a seat at the table.
Okay, Ken, again, thanks for being here with us and talking about the trades and particularly roofing. Tell us a little bit more about what you do with students and encouraging them to go into the trade.
So we go to every job fair we can through every high school. We also try to go to the career technology centers that have a building trades class in it. It's unfortunate that we don't have more in there. Mm-hmm. And then there have been other schools or career technology centers that have had building trades classes in there. But for one reason or another, they haven't been able to fill them. So we've got to try to engage the kids a little bit, maybe a little bit younger, to try to show them that there are other things out there besides going to college. And we've also got to talk to the counselors a little bit more too, because I think that's important. But we try to be involved in every career fair that there is, through the high schools, mm-hmm. through the community colleges. We're gonna go everywhere to try to find them. you know, you'd be surprised, not just in roofing, but in the construction trades alone. I bet there's a lot of people out there that went to college, got a degree, couldn't find anything, any jobs available mm-hmm. where they got their degree in, and now they're in the construction, and they haven't left.
Yeah. Oh, and I know that's true. And the schools do really need to think a little bit about that, the counselors and the other folks that work with kids. I read an article a few days ago about a woman who the counselor, somebody from school, high school, called and said, "We have problems with your child. He doesn't want to go to college. He wants to do the trades." She said she had to bite her tongue and say, "There's nothing wrong with the trades." And so we need to change our attitude, too, I think, within the school system. I did tell some kids one time that they didn't need to go to college. They needed some training and some gumption. Now, the word gumption, kind of, they had to think about that. But that everybody needs training of some kind, and it's just a matter of what they want to learn how to do.
And I think the thing, you know, to look at, and I may get some people that may frown on me when I say this, but, you know, when you go to college, let's just take – I don't know what it costs to go to college. I'm a little bit older than college age, but let's just say it costs $20,000 a year. So you're going to school for 4 years to get a degree, mostly, right? So now you're $80,000. You took student loans out to go to college, mm-hmm. right? So you're $80,000 in debt. You graduate from college. You got to find a job, okay? And hopefully you find a job in that field. So when you find a job, now you got $80,000 to pay back, right? Our apprenticeship programs, and the roofers in general, five-year program, we pay you while you're working, and we also pay you while you're in school. So it's not a whole lot. It's a stipend check. But while you're in school learning, you have to, you know, it's no different. But you're earning, you're learning. And so in 4 years' time, we're a person comes out of college with $80,000 in debt and has to find a job. These individuals already have a job, number one. They're getting paid, and I guarantee you they've already made over $80,000.
Well, they've probably been able to save a little bit,
for
too.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so that they can kind of look at maybe a new apartment or a house or
new
something.
New vehicle. Transportation is important in the construction industry because we do move frequently from job to job. I mean, we don't go to an office every day, you know, and just, you know, stay in there in a little cubicle. They're moving from from an elementary school to a high school mm-hmm. to a building downtown, you know, over to KCK. I mean, they just travel. And so transportation is important. And so, you know, that would be the first thing that I would look at if I'm going through and I'm saving mm-hmm. money. The first thing I'm going to look at, and I know people, you don't have to go out and get a brand new car. Just get a good, reliable transportation. But I think that's what everybody doesn't understand is that you earn as you learn, and you are making money instead of, you know, being in college and you know, getting in debt right off the bat.
Right.
And trying to figure out how you're going to pay off that debt.
And on top of all that, you're learning a skill that you're going to take with you the rest of your life, and no one's going to be able to take it away.
Correct.
Exactly.
And our final exams, I mean, I'll just give you just an example of roofers. You know, they take a written test. They've been in school for, you know, 4 years. That fifth year is where they go over, they review everything that they've done mm-hmm. over the last 4 years. Their first class for that year is a review class, so they go over everything. That next class is their testing class, and the first thing they have to do is take a 235 question test.
Whoa.
And they have to pass it by 80% before they move on, because the next step is the hands-on.
What are some of the questions that would be on it?
It may talk about the types of insulation that go on a roof. So what type of nail patterns? What type of nails? What type of screws? What is this type of roof? You know, is it a barrel top? Is it a sawtooth? Is it, you know, just different aspects of roofing? The types of materials that we use. I mean, they also got to know math. We give them a perimeter of a roof. They've got to figure out their material for the roof. So, you know, one of the things we try to do is as they go into class and they become a journeyman, mm-hmm. obviously we want them to become a journeyman, but we're really trying to train them to become foremen.
Okay. The idea of the different kinds of roofs is kind of interesting, too. It kind of overlaps all areas of construction.
It does. And, you know, there's a lot. there's a lot of times where the roof needs to go on almost, you know, after the shell goes up, because they can't, you really can't hang sheetrock if the roof isn't covered mm-hmm. in waterproof, right? So, you know, we're one of the first, I won't say we're the first ones on, but we're there fairly early in the early stages of the game, so to speak, mm-hmm. when you're doing a building to try to get that roof on so they can start working inside and getting going in there.
Everybody's counting on you to get it done so they can go in and do their
and then
work.
Yeah. Do the rest of theirs. In the high school and the junior college programs, are you aware of, is there any data out there that tells us how many students actually go out to get a job and start with the not the internships, but the apprenticeships? And
We really don't. And maybe that's a good question, and maybe that's something we need to look at just to see what that's going on. I will say this, the only – obviously, we try to keep track of, you know, our percentage of minorities uh-huh. in there, because that's important that we, you know, we want to look like the community, right? We want to be diversified in our workforce, and that's important.
Right, because all communities are diversified.
Absolutely. Everybody deserves a chance to have a job, and we want to give them the opportunity. So that's important to us.
Okay. What was the other? Let's see. I came up with some other questions too. Are the programs in the high schools, are they developed well enough for students to go right into either apprenticeships or jobs? I mean, either one.
Of them are. I mean, the building trades programs that are in the high schools and sometimes in the career technology schools and tech schools. They're mainly just a general overall building trades. They don't just hit on one particular trade. Now there are some that do, but the building trades in general is just a generalization of the building trades. They'll, you know, I know a couple high schools used to build houses, and so they would take their building trades classes out there, and they would build the house from the ground up, so they had an opportunity to at least participate in every part of the construction on that house. There are some, like I said, there are some that are trade specific, but those are few and far between.
Okay.
And you know, we try to, you know, if a person goes through them programs and they graduate from it and they get a certificate, you know, we automatically put them into the apprenticeship program when they're hired. That is one way. And the other one is, I talk about the veterans for a minute because I think the veterans are important to all the trades. We have a lot of veterans that are roofers, and there's a lot of veterans in the trades too. But, you know, the Helmets to Hard Hats program is important to the construction trades and important to us. If there is a veteran out there that has gotten out of the service and he has his GI Bill, through the Helmets to Hard Hats program, they can supplement their – as they're going through the apprenticeship program, they can supplement their pay up to a certain amount of months. I think it's either 30 or 36. But as they move up, you know, they will supplement their pay through using their GI Bill. So I think that's important for people to know, because a lot of people don't understand that. It doesn't take long to get registered. You need your contractor involved in it too. And most of our contractors are willing. But veterans automatically are entered into the apprenticeship program as well.
That's a great program. Mm-hmm. I hope you get that out there to the veterans who are coming back.
I mean, and there's other programs. I mean, I know we're talking about roofing, but the fitters call veterans in piping. So there are other avenues out there too. But that Helmets to Hard Hats program, you know, is important to everybody. And if there's veterans out there that are looking for work, please. And if this sounds interesting to you, please get a hold of one of the trades and try to get involved.
So a person, they want to join the apprenticeship program. What do they have to have? A GED, a high school? They got to be good in math? What does it take to even enter into the program?
We're probably unique. We do not require a high school diploma or a GED. We just require that you be 18 years old. Now, saying that and going to high schools and talking to them is a little difficult, right? Because, but they need to know how to read. Obviously, you get blueprints, so they're going to need to learn how to read mm-hmm. that. And they got to have a good knowledge of math too, because you're going to have to measure things. You're going to have to cut things to the right length. So it is important that they get some of those skill set. We just felt like, you know, some of our best roofers have come where they have not been able to graduate high school or get a GED, and we feel like everybody has the right to work, and they can be some of the best roofers mm-hmm. we ever seen. Well, we have an obligation as in the roofers is that if we do have somebody that gets in there that may not have the capacity to read or write, if they come in and they get into the apprenticeship program, it's our obligation to work with them and help them through that. We're not going to just throw them to the wayside and say, nope, sorry, you can't read or write, or you can't do math. Sorry, we're not going to work with you. We're going to work with them and help them along the way to do what they can, because, like I said, they do have the right to have a job, and they want to provide for their families just like everybody else.
It's your goal for...
I was just going to say, there could be other reasons why they didn't get those skills early on.
Be.
And if you work with them a little bit, like you say, then they'll be able to get it down.
Right.
And it's your goal to make them successful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, everybody's got to be successful, right? If the company's successful, we can have the members will be successful, and vice versa. So it's important that we provide a good, stable environment for them to work in, and also good wages and benefits.
You talked about being able to get the finishing training in a high school environment, and you said when they finish that, they go directly to a contractor or another or somewhere to get a job.
Well, if they want to get involved and they want to get into the roofing, the first thing they need to do is either call the hall, go on our website again, rooferslocal20.com. The hall's number is 816-313-9420. Call there, get on our website again, get a list of our contractors. That's the first thing you need mm-hmm. to do, and then go to those contractors and fill out applications. Okay. We can direct you on ones that we know that are hiring. We try to get them close to where they live at. Sometimes that doesn't always happen because maybe that contractor mm-hmm. may not be hiring at the time. The other thing we try to do, too, is if there's non-union roofers out there that want to come in, if they've got experience behind them, we take if they can prove their experience through W-2s or 1099s, we can slot them up into the apprenticeship and give them the opportunity to go work at a little bit higher rate, you know, because they do have a little bit of experience. So we try to take their experience into play, so to speak, to give them that opportunity too.
Have you noticed that some of the immigrants have come in with experience from other countries and maybe some different skills if the construction is done a little bit differently because of different materials that are available?
I can't say from other countries, but I can just say that when they get here, that's when they're getting their experience.
Okay.
I'm not seeing it from other countries, but definitely here when they get here.
So after a long career in the roofing industry, going through the apprenticeship program, what could a guy expect in retirement and things?
To sit back and relax for a little bit.
Don't have to worry about much. Yeah.
Maybe travel.
If you put in the time, obviously you deserve to retire, right, and enjoy your life. But, you know, our pension is in good shape. The board that oversees that has been proactive and tried to make sure that we take care of our pension. We've seen guys that are retiring, making the same amount of money retiring because of our pension as they did when they were working on the roof. And there's been a couple times where guys have actually made more than what they did when they were on the roof. So that's important to us too. We gotta take care of those guys.
And all they have to do is wake up after a long career.
let me say one thing just real quick. We don't care what color you are. We don't care what gender you are. You know, if you want a roof, we'll give you an opportunity to roof.
Interesting. When I look around the community, at different houses. My husband and I love to look at houses. So we walk, or we go around, look at different houses, and the roofs are so different, you know, between the tile and the compositions. And then wood shakes aren't doing, we're not doing those too much anymore.
No, I think right now, I think most of the insurance companies that any house that has wood shakes on there are encouraging them really strongly. Uh-huh. To get them off and get a different one on because of the hazards that come along with fire.
Yeah.
Do you have any upcoming job fairs or anything?
Actually, I think we're going to be down at Manual Tech next on the 17th. And then we've got another one coming up. Brandon Ellington is doing a career fair, I believe, in April. So we'll be involved in that. You know, if anybody wants to invite us to a career fair, call the hall. We'll come. High school or, you know, any type of job fair, we'll be there. I mean, that's important to us that we be out there and give everybody at least the opportunity to see what we provide.
Great.
Well, we have just had an interesting visit with Kevin King. He's a business manager with Roofers Local 20. Thanks, Kevin, for coming on the show. The opportunities in the roofing field are great, and I appreciate it. The helmets to hat program. Mm-hmm. Call the Union Hall Local 20 at 816-313-9420 if you want to be a roofer.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Good evening and welcome to Remember Our Struggle. I'm Ariana Eckel, journeyman wireman of IBW Local 124. Tonight, I'm going to speak a bit about the union-led contemporary struggles raging around the globe since late 2018, demanding an improvement in the lives of working people in many forms. Today, unions in France, including air traffic control workers, rail workers, bus drivers, teachers, firefighters, hospital staff, and others, are 8 days into a general strike, which they have threatened to continue indefinitely until the government negotiates. This latest French unrest is rooted in the contention that French government is attempting to force people to work longer for smaller pensions, an issue which may ring familiar to anyone who has heard about the Grassley-Alexander plan in the Senate to manipulate and destabilize union pensions in this country. France has seen unrest for over a year, starting with the Yellow Vest protests and road blockades, which sprung up from a government-proposed increase in fuel prices, but which grew into a movement demanding the reintroduction of the solidarity tax on wealth, a minimum wage increase, the implementation of citizens' initiative petitions, among other things. The strongly repressed but still popular Yellow Vest movement and other groups are joining unions in France in their general strike, and the scope of the demands may well expand as workers develop stronger solidarity and more confidence. This unrest has also been evident in South America across Bolivia, Chile, Ecuador, and others. Unions in Colombia have also been at the forefront of the struggle in their own country, along with students, opposition political parties, and various organizations of the country's indigenous population. One 55-year-old demonstrator named Olga Cannon told the AFP, "We are marching because in Colombia we are tired of corruption, of impunity, that the government does nothing for the poor." The country's biggest union president, Robert Gomez of the CUT, "It is an accumulation of situations that we hope to see reviewed after today, including a great national dialogue of conciliation." On December 4th, a third general strike shook the country, featuring marches, chanting, and dance. Organizations that participated in the strike took issue with Colombian President Duque's security policy, as well as attempts to introduce a more flexible labor market, weaken public pension funds, and raise the retirement age. Other groups are making their own standing, including students who are demanding more funding for education, while indigenous communities insist on greater protection in remote areas, where 134 activists have been killed since Duque came to power in August 2018. As of this morning, 13 broad demands have been approved and put forward, but the Duque government has refused negotiation. Last month, workers in Chile led a general strike which paralyzed all ports, most mines, as well as most of the public sector. Unrest has been going on for some time, and strikers called for respect for human rights, an end to the brutality of protesters, and the development of a new national constitution. The new national constitution is said to be under works, but protesters are very concerned with the contents and wish to have their interests considered. According to the Human Rights Institute, over 200 people have lost their sight due to a seemingly intentional campaign by riot police of intentionally blinding protesters with tear gas canisters and rubber bullets to the face. Chilean activist Pablo Abufom told Democracy Now!, "Well, a constituent assembly is basically what people are asking for. The government is talking about the Congress rewriting the Constitution, but people in their popular assemblies in their neighborhoods are talking about a constituent assembly of people being involved in actual rewriting from the base of our social agreement of our Constitution. Also earlier this year, in June, Brazilian union public workers and others led a one-day general strike in opposition to the government's plan to cut pensions, raise the retirement age, cuts to the education budget, and more. Thousands of people answered the call, protesting, marching, dancing, and blocking roads across the country, but particularly in the capital. There are common threads across the global unrest, which are also part of the fabric of the United States. Proposed pension cuts, social spending cuts, the imposition of austerity measures, poor investment in national infrastructure, such as education, racial disparity of opportunities, incomes, and wealth, and more. Regular working folks like us across the world are fighting for better, and not just for their own communities, but for all communities. And more people are answering that call. These contemporary struggles are showing possible ways forward for the American labor movement and how working people today are capable of banding together and demanding substantial improvements in conditions and getting them. Have a good evening, everyone.
Thank you, Ariana. All right, this is the Heartland Labor Forum calendar. Saturday, December 14th, is the Turkish Food and Art Festival at the Dialogue Institute, 4215 Shawnee Drive in Kansas City, Kansas. And then Saturday, December 14th, is Stand Up KC Shows Harriet, the film about Harriet Tubman, and that's at the Glenwood Arts Theater. And you must make reservations. So if you want to do that, go to the Stand Up KC Facebook page to do that. All Souls Forum on Sunday, December 15th at 10 a.m. It's Tara Ragavir talking about getting serious about housing, and that is at All Souls UU Church, 4501 Walnut in KC Mo. Also Sunday, December 15th at 2 p.m., Community of Reason, Jobs with Justices Cecilia Belser-Patton, is features with It's About Belonging, Art Plus Activism Equals Artivism. And that's going to be at UMKC Hague Hall, room 301, at the northwest corner of 52nd and Rock Hill. Next Tuesday, December 17th at 6 p.m. is Gender-Based Violence, a panel discussion of policies held at the Kansas City, Kansas Public Library at 625 Minnesota Avenue in KCK on the second floor in the auditorium. And the sponsors for that are the AAUW and the Women's Equality Coalition. Sunday, January 19th, 2020, from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m., it is the 16th Annual Martin Luther King Jr. Bowling Celebration, hosted by UAW Locals 249 and 31 Civil Rights Committees that will be held at the AMF Pro Bowl. And then lastly, the NARAL Pro-Choice Missouri Listening Tour that is going to be Wednesday, December 18th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the SEIU Local 1 at 4526 El Paseo. And that's going to be an advocate who's going to be discussed from NARAL, who's going to be discussing the most pressing issues that they face when making a decision about how, when, and if, and with whom they would like to raise a family. They talk about abortion, STI, STD treatment, prenatal care. It's all on the table. So again, Wednesday, December 18th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the SEIU Local 1, 4526 El Paseo. And check out the Heartland Labor Forum schedule on the web at heartlandlaborforum.org, where you can also listen to today's show. Next week on the Heartland Labor Forum, we'll be talking about neoliberalism 101 and the very un-neoliberal bike co-op. My name is Jen Zaman. I have been the engineer and host tonight. Judy Ansel will be back next week. Standing side by side with working people, sweating for an honest wage I'll never be ashamed of. So take
still got our pride, 'cause we are the working class, and that's the place to be.
You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back too. Send us your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to heartlandlaborforumkkfi@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming schedule, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here at 90.1 FM KKFI.
The conditions where you come from to struggle and fight for the kind.